This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswine.
Everybody, how you doing? I'm pretty excited about today for two reasons, because we have a world-renowned author with us. That's Carol Brody Fleet, and she is just a transformative woman because she transformed herself and she transformed lives. She's written a couple books, one being Happily Even After, a guide to getting through and beyond the grief of widowhood. She is CEO of Widows Wear Stilettos. Hey, Carol.
Hey, Lisa, how you doing?
I'm doing great. And I invited along for this discussion someone very near and dear to my heart. I've known her since kindergarten, and it is my friend Kathy. Hey, Kath, how you doing?
Hello, good. How are you, Lisa?
Yeah, I'm good.
And
the reason
and Carol?
The reason we have Kathy here today, Carol, is because Kathy lost her husband 4 years ago, and I wanted to make sure that I was really hitting the topics that widows really like to hear, because I have not experienced this myself. So, Carol, could you give us just a little bit of a background of your story and your husband?
Of course. My husband, Michael, was a 28-year veteran of the Santa Ana, California Police Department. And in 1998, he was diagnosed with ALS. That's more commonly known as Lou Gehrig's disease. And that diagnosis began the journey of our lives for all of us. In 1998, our daughter, Kendall, was 9 years old. And I had just left a career in the legal profession, which is where I'm from by education and degree. And I was embarking on a very successful career, actually, in the beauty and cosmetics industry. And that's where we all were when he was handed this diagnosis. And for those who are not familiar, ALS is under the umbrella of muscular dystrophy. They don't know what causes it. There is no cure. And as the doctor said, it is 100% fatal. Mm. You don't go into remission. You don't get better. There is really nothing at this point that one can do to overcome the illness. And Mike passed away in December of 2000. And that left me a widow with a then 11-year-old daughter. I had no sense of direction. I certainly had no contemporaries that I could talk to. Mm-hmm. In 2000, if you'll remember, the internet was really still in its infancy. I mean, for me, all I could find was chat rooms and porn, and I really didn't need either one at that moment in time. So you didn't have the resources that you have now, which is wonderful, but back then you didn't have them. And there was no sense of direction that spoke to me, mm-hmm, that was going to really get me out of the flannel pajamas with the feet in them, off of the couch, and in a proactive, positive direction. And it was important, not just for me, but I wanted to model for my daughter a healthy recovery, a positive recovery. Mm-hmm. And so through a little trial, a few errors, and just a goal to get strong, and I got serious about getting strong again. That is how Widows Wear Stilettos was ultimately born.
Can you tell me, and I'm speaking to you both now, Kathy and Carol, okay, in that moment, because one of you, Carol, sort of knew that your husband was going to die, and then Kathy's husband,
right,
died suddenly, so she did not.
Right.
Now, I want to know what goes through your mind, whether you know or you don't. It is a huge punch to the gut. And so can you speak to how you felt in that moment when you found out? Carol, go ahead.
Well, okay. I was going to toss it over to Kathy.
Okay, go ahead. If that's what you'd like to do, go right ahead.
Why don't we toss it to Kathy first? Because there is definitely a different dynamic.
All right.
In the two methods of thought. So, Kathy?
I agree. For me, I was numb, and it was it took a while to... I had to go through the motions of the funeral and the arrangements and doing all that, which I barely remember. So I was numb for at least a month.
And you had no answers as to his death.
Right. I had no answers, and there was all this, you know, unanswered questions about what happened, why this happened to me. I mean, that I'm now a widow. That was in itself, I couldn't grasp my brain around that. And I had a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old at the time. So I had to still go on with life for them so that their soccer and their volleyball and their things that they were into was still going forward, and that they were going to be okay. So I had to get out of this so to speak, fog and funk and do that for them. If I didn't have them, I'd probably be curled up on the couch, you know, not getting up. But I did it for them.
Is that true for you, Carol?
In a manner of speaking, yes and no. First of all, it's important to make one thing clear. When you lose somebody and it's over a longer period of time as opposed to having the rug yanked out from under you like Kathy did. I mean, Kathy was sucker punched.
Right.
When you lose someone suddenly like that, it is a sucker punch. However, it's important for people to know that just because you know that the inevitable is going to happen does not make it any easier. When you have people tell you, well, Carol, you knew it was coming. You can be prepared. There is no way to prepare for it.
No.
The only way you can prepare is with paperwork. We were able to make arrangements ahead of time, for example. We knew pretty much where everything was. You had a little bit of run-up to kind of get your ducks in a row. But that having been said, when that moment came, and concept became reality, I too was numb. I cannot remember, can't remember between December of 2000 and June of 2001, mm-hmm. but I also lost my father right after I lost Mike. So
that's kind
of an extension of the numb.
Carol, yeah. So did Kathy.
That's very coincidental.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Year and a half.
Oh, my gosh.
Year
and
9 months later, my dad passed away.
It was 4 months for me.
Oh
my gosh!
That I lost my father. In fact, he was diagnosed with cancer. It wasn't 3 months after Mike passed away that my father was diagnosed with terminal cancer. But it's that same numb. It's the same concept of you can't get your head around the word widow. One of the big reasons for that. Because we all have the stereotypical image of what a widow looks like and what it's supposed to be, and we know that that image is not what we're looking at in the mirror.
Absolutely. I remember the driving to the funeral. My father-in-law and mother-in-law, Chris's parents, were driving me. And I just remember, I just out loud said, does this mean I'm a widow? I mean, the word just seemed so, foreign to me. And
right.
I remember saying that in my moments of, clarity. So it was very, very strange.
Those moments come like snapshots. They come like camera snapshots, and you have these moments where you're lucid.
Yes.
And that's why we're so good at remembering these certain moments of the funeral and maybe the day before. But if you ask a widow about that time period in general, it's very, very foggy.
Absolutely.
So you have these little snapshots that you can focus in on. And that's the thing, and that's why we're here, is to let people know that there are other faces of widowhood, many other faces of widowhood, yeah. and we're two of them.
And yes. And talk about the process of moving through the grief, because I know some people who have been able to sort of what seems like bounce right back, and then other people tend to have a longer time of it. There is no timeline, right?
No, there is no timeline, and that is a very, very important thing. If your listeners take nothing else away, listeners, take that away. If you have lost someone or something that is precious, if you've suffered a life-altering, core-shaking loss, your timeline is your timeline. Now, if you feel stuck, if you want to move forward and you just don't know how to start, that's another story. We can help you do that. But if you have people around you saying, well, you know, Kathy, it's been 4 years. You should be over it by now. What's your problem?
Right. And I've had that.
You can't.
Yeah, I've had that.
Of course. And you know what? I'm sorry to say I don't know any widowed person who hasn't had at least mm-hmm. one person say that. Unfortunately, you can't throat punch people because that's assault. But what you need to be able to do is to get, again, you've got to be serious about being strong, and you look at them and say, how's your widowhood recovery going for you?
I like the way you put that.
You need to. Thank you. You need to put them in your place, and you need to let people know that my timeline isn't necessarily your timeline or Kathy's timeline or any other of the millions of people who are recovering from this loss. And that's what people are doing when they impose that kind of opinion on you, is what they're saying is, this is my timeline, and I'm uncomfortable with your grief, so move on now.
Exactly.
And that's you've got to take ownership of your healing journey.
So the moving out of the stuckness, What are some ideas that you can give to someone about moving out of the stuckness?
The first thing to do is get proactive. As soon as you take control over a situation where you've really had little control, if any, you feel better. When you are proactive, when you're saying, okay, I can't control the circumstances that are life and death, but I can control my reactions to it. And the first thing to do is get as many tools as you can. Books, audio, any kind of support group, whether it's in person or online, seminars, coaching, networking. If you need professional help, by all means, get professional help. Start with your doctor or your cleric, whoever you're comfortable with in talking to. You know that ridiculous cliche, time heals all wounds?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's a lie. It's a complete lie. Time plus tools heals wounds, not just time. Okay?
Yes, nice.
You've got to get tools. And whatever tools speak to you, you know, it's important to get the comfort and the support and the education that speaks to you. When I became widowed, there were plenty of grief books around. I think I own most of them. And they're mm-hmm. wonderful books. But for me, for Carol, and for my particular healing journey, nothing was speaking to me. Nothing was talking about the things that I needed to talk about. Everything seemed to just focus on grief. That's okay. But how do you get your benefits from the government? And how do you deal with the idiot things that people say to you? And how do I help my daughter when I can't even get out of the penguin flannel pajamas? The true story, penguin flannel pajamas.
Nice,
let's all visualize that for a minute. So sexy.
Yeah.
And they had feet in them. They had feet in them because, you know, they have to have feet in them. You know, how am I going to do all these things? And what about things like dating and love and intimacy? You know, nobody was talking about those things. I was afraid to ask about them. So that's the big goal now, is to hopefully provide a roadmap for other widowed people, not just women, anybody who has lost the person they expected to spend the rest of their life with. That's the important thing, is to give some kind of sense of direction. And that's what I was looking for and couldn't find.
You know, someone else who I know who lost a husband said, I wanted to know when it was okay for me to not wear the ring.
Oh, my God. Isn't that a hot button issue? Kathy, what's your take on that?
You know, and that was one of, you know, my issues as well. And I, it was about probably a year and a half after. And I just thought, you know, it's time for me to just take it off. I'm not married. And
where is it? Where did you put it?
It's in a special box in my jewelry box. And I've got it with his ring and some other special jewelry from him. And I have it there, and I take it out and I put it on some days, you know, but I don't wear it out on a daily basis anymore. It just was the right time for me.
What about you, Carol?
And Kathy just hit on the right words, and I hope everybody really tuned into what she just said, when it was the right time for me. I recently wrote an article for the Huffington Post, and it was really called It's Okay. And because so many of the letters that we receive start out with the words, when is it okay to? Is it appropriate to?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, it's really time to talk about these things. And, of course, the wedding ring issue is huge, and so huge that it's in both of my books. It is okay to take your ring off whenever you want to. I don't care if it's a half hour after funeral. It is okay to never take your ring off.
Right.
It's okay to move your ring to your right hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to take your ring and make a new piece of jewelry out of it. It's okay to take your ring and your late beloved's ring and combine the two and make a new piece of jewelry out of it. It is okay to do whatever you have it in your heart to do. Imagine the horror of the widow who was told that it was in bad taste to keep wearing her ring.
Oh, come on.
Because because somebody had to point out to her that she wasn't married anymore, because she didn't realize that on her
right.
own.
Right, she'd forgotten
you
that
know,
day.
What about the widowed who was confronted because she took her rings off? Well, don't you love him anymore?
Oh.
I mean, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what side of the bread does the butter go on?
It's that grief is so unique.
It's completely unique. And that is what people surrounding bereaved need to understand. For me, it was about a year in that I moved my rings to my right hand. And I left them there for another 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. And that includes when I resumed dating. Because mm-hmm. for me, that was when I was comfortable. That was what was comfortable for me. And then after that time, I felt, okay, it's time for me to put these rings away. And that's what I did.
Okay. And when you went out on that first date, did it feel odd to you? Did you, I mean, what did that feel like for you?
And how long was that afterwards?
Honestly, for me, it was.
Kathy wants to know.
Kathy's asking. I know where this is going. That's why I'm always careful to preface that very, very hot button question with, for me, the time was right at about just shy of 2 years. Now, remember, the first year for me, I also lost my father, so I was really focused on two things, my career and my daughter, not in that order of importance, but those were my primary focuses. And I also had to get my health back. I was in an absolute ruined condition after just the physical rigors of caring for a terminally ill person, which millions of people face in the United States today, not just ill spouses, ill parents, ill children. And I had my own health issues that I had to deal with, and I had to get strong again. So that the whole first year, that doesn't even count. And for me, it was just shy of 2 years when I felt like, okay, I can dip my toe back in the dating waters. And, you know, Lisa, that's a whole other show.
Yeah.
We'll
have to bring you back, Carol, and have that whole discussion.
We'll
talk about it.
That would be great. That would be awesome. Because that is a huge issue, a huge topic in the widowed community.
Yep.
But that's when the time was right for me. Some people go back much sooner, go back to dating. Other people wait longer. It really depends on you, and you will know when the time is right for you.
You know, as we're winding down here a little bit, one thing I do want to talk about is actually anger. Anger at the spouse who passed away, or anger at God or whoever you think your higher power is, because I know that Kathy dealt with a lot of anger. Can you speak a little bit about that, Carol?
Happy to, because it is important for people to realize that it's normal to be angry, regardless of the circumstances surrounding the death of your spouse. You know, we assume, and rightfully so, that, let's say, suicide survivors are angry because they feel that that death was preventable. Mm-hmm. And again, that's another show and another psychology. But everybody has anger on some levels, issues of abandonment. I used to come home after rotten dates. And believe me, I got 7 years of stories of rotten dates, okay? And I would yell at Mike because it was his fault that right. I was in this position.
Right.
So I would scream at him, believe me. When he was diagnosed, I was mad at God. In fact, he, as happenstance would have it, he was diagnosed on the morning of Yom Kippur. I'm Jewish, and we were in the middle of wow. the High Holy Days, and this is the holiest day of the year. Mm-hmm. And I did go to synagogue that night, and I was mad. I wasn't going to atone for anything, because who was this God that you know, gave my husband this illness that was going to take him away? It took a couple of years for me to get through that.
Yes.
But anger, whether it's at God, at your spouse, just at the universe in general, it's normal. We can help you deal with that and process it, not get over it. Move through it. You get to the root and the core of your anger and start to move forward from it. It's okay to be angry. It's not okay to stay that way.
You went through that, Kath, right?
I went through a lot of the anger, yes. And I also, I'm a Catholic, and I have a lot of the Catholic guilt about the dating and first of all, being angry at him, that I should not be angry at him, but I was. And there's certain days when the kids are, you know, things are going on in their lives, and that my husband being gone has affected them. Those are the days I get angry,
right.
And they come and go.
Sure.
And but it's also the guilt of me moving on, and that when I laugh or am I happy? Oh my gosh, I shouldn't be laughing or happy. I should be grief. You know, and so that's where I have a lot. And I'm like I said, my husband's been gone 4 years, 1 month, and I have not dated once yet. So,
but you aren't ready yet, or are you?
I don't. I feel different about it today than I did in the beginning. So it's getting there. It's just taking me a while. So,
And that's, as we've talked about, everybody has the different, you know, timelines. Carol, I'm not kidding when I'm saying I would love to have you come back, because there are a bunch.
I would love to be back with you.
I want to talk more about dating. I want to go ahead and talk a little bit more about making holidays better for people. I want to talk about getting a new relationship or connection with those that have passed over through the spiritual realm, and feeling like you do still have a connection to them. So I'm going to just tease everybody with the fact that I'm going to try and get Carol back on with us so we can re-talk about all of this, because this isn't even just about being a widow. This is about dealing with grief, period. Okay.
That's
and we're down to the last 5 minutes. So I want to go to what I call the RL3, and the RL3 are three lovely little questions that help us get to know Carol a little bit better. So don't worry, Carol, this is going to be good. So my first question to you is, what one TV show could you watch for 2 weeks straight?
I can feel my family laughing at me right now. there's so many. If we're talking currently for comedy, Modern Family.
I gotta
knew you were
going
to say Modern
that.
Modern Family. Oh, my gosh. Modern Family is so brilliantly written. And I also think The Newsroom, which, thank God, it's coming back in July. The Newsroom is one of the most intelligent and brilliantly written pieces of work out there right now. So those are the two must-have TV shows for me right now.
Absolute. Love Modern Family. They're just the brilliant. Oh. Brilliantly funny. I'll even watch the they reran one yesterday, and I was like, I'm going to watch it again. I know what's going to happen. I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. We're in summer reruns. I DVR the reruns.
Yeah. Nice. All right, here's question.
Absolutely.
Question number two. What was one of your biggest faux pas?
In life or in...
In whatever you want to tell us. It can be funny. It can be any... What was one of your biggest faux pas?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. Because that sounds like I haven't made any mistakes.
I know. Like Carol's like, I'm awesome.
Oh, my
I didn't
God.
Mean...
You know what? I think, going back to the widowhood thing, I think one of the biggest mistakes I made had to involve my daughter. And I call it smotherhood. Is we were both
mom.
So afraid of oh my god, helicopter mom.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, no, I was marsupial mom. I mean, put her, wrap her in cotton and put her on a shelf. We were so afraid of life that I didn't want to let her out of my sight. If I so much as sneezed, she would want to call 911, and we were driving each other nuts without even realizing we were driving each other nuts. So that was absolutely one of the biggest mistakes I made.
And we wrap up every time with the final and third question, and Kathy, you're both going to be a part of this. We call this telling us your fantasy name. They've called it something else in the past, but we call it fantasy name. And you take the name of the first pet you ever had, and then you add the last name is the street that you grew up on. So what would your fantasy name be, Carol?
Well, my first pet was a boy cat, and his name was Simon because he was Siamese. And when you're 8 years old, what else do you name a Siamese cat but Simon?
Of course.
And then I grew up on Ostrom. Shout out to everybody in Lakewood, California. And so my fantasy name, I would be a boy, and my name would be Simon Ostrom.
It sounds like somebody who would be one of the dancers on Dancing with the Stars or something.
My daughter's nickname or fantasy name would be so much cooler because it would be Nikita Ponderosa. Now, what does that sound like?
Yeah. That is a cross between a Western and some form of a
foreign film.
That is awesome. Kathy, what about you?
Mine would be my first pet I got with my husband, Zeke, and I grew up on Donna Street in Warren. Shout out to Warren. My name would be Zeke Donna.
Zeke Donna, that kind of sounds like a dominatrix. I'm not quite sure about that. But Kathy, thank you so much for coming. And when we get Carol back, if you want to come back on.
I'd love to.
I think that'd be great. And Carol, you have such a bright spirit and so many important, fun things to say to people. And I say fun because I know that the grieving process and when you're healing isn't fun. But you've given people a lot of little things that they can look at to know that, you know, life is going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
And the books are awesome. Your books are awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carol, for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been great being with both of you.
You too, Carol.